Chapter 7 Two evenings later, a subdued Pitt sat at the cabin's dining table and scrutinized a spread of topographical maps. He leaned back in the chair and rubbed his eyes. All he had to show for his effort was a distraught girlfriend and a hefty bill from the company that had rented him the helicopter. The sound of feet thudded up the stairs to the front balcony, and soon a head that was completely shaved, and a face with friendly hazel eyes and an enormous Kaiser Wilhelm mustache, peered through the window in the Dutch door. "Hello, the house!" hailed the voice that seemed to come from a pair of size 12 boots. "Come in," Pitt answered without rising. The man's body was squat and barrel-chested and must have sagged the scales, Pitt judged, at close to 220 pounds. The stranger shoved out a beefy hand.
"You must be Pitt."
"Yes, I'm Pitt."
"Good, I found you on the first try. I was afraid of taking a wrong turn in the dark. I'm Abe Steiger."
"Colonel Steiger?"
"Forget the title. As you can see, I came dressed like an old pack rat."
"I hardly expected you to answer my inquiry in person. A letter would have done just as well." Steiger gave a wide grin.
"The fact of the matter is, I wasn't about to let the price of a stamp cheat me out of a prospecting trip."
"A prospecting trip?"
"I'm killing two birds with the same stone, so to speak. One, I'm scheduled to speak next week at Chanute Air Force Base in Illinois on aircraft safety. Two, you're sitting in the heart of Colorado mining country. And since I have a raving fetish for prospecting, I took the liberty of stopping over in hopes of getting in a little gold panning before continuing on to my lecture. You're more than welcome to bunk with me. I'm batching it at the moment anyway."
"Mr. Pitt, I accept your hospitality."
"Did you bring any luggage?"
"Outside in a rented car."
"Bring it in and I'll fix some coffee."
Then, as an afterthought, "Would you like some supper?"
"Thanks, but I had a bite with Harvey Dolan before I drove up."
"You saw the nose gear, then?"
Steiger nodded and produced an old leather briefcase. He unzipped the sides and passed Pitt a stapled folder. "The status report on Air Force Boeing C-97, number 75403, commanded by a Major Vylander. You might as well go over it while I unpack. If you have any questions, just holler."
After Steiger was settled in a spare bedroom, he joined Pitt at the table.
"Does that resolve your curiosity?"
Pitt looked up over the folder. "This report states that 03 vanished over the Pacific during a routine flight between California and Hawaii during January of 1954.
"That's what Air Force records show."
"How do you explain the presence of the nose gear here in Colorado?"
"No great mystery. Sometime during the aircraft's service life, the gear assembly was probably replaced with a new one. It's not an uncommon occurrence. The mechanics found a flaw in the structure. A hard landing cracked the strut. Perhaps it was damaged while being towed. There are a dozen different reasons that would require a replacement."
"Do the maintenance records show a replacement?"
"No, they do not."
"Isn't that a bit peculiar?"
"Irregular, maybe, but not peculiar. Air Force maintenance personnel are noted for their skill at mechanical repair, not for administrative bookkeeping."
"This also states that no traces of the aircraft or its crew ever turned up."
"I'll concede a puzzler on that score. The records indicate the search was an extensive one, much larger than the normal air-sea rescue procedures called for by the book. And yet, combined units of the Air Force and Navy drew a big fat zero."
Steiger nodded thanks as Pitt handed him a steaming cup of coffee.
"However, these things happen. Our files are crammed with aircraft that have flown into oblivion."
"Flown into oblivion." That's very poetic. There was no concealing the cynicism in Pitt's voice.
Steiger ignored the tone and sipped at his coffee. "To an air safety investigator, every unsolved crash is a thorn in the flesh. We're like doctors who occasionally lose a patient on the operating table. The ones that get away keep us awake nights."
"And 03, asked Pitt evenly, "does that one keep you awake?"
"You're asking me about an accident that occurred when I was 4 years old. I can't relate to it. As far as I'm concerned, Mr. Pitt, and as far as the Air Force is concerned, the disappearance of 03 is a closed book. She's lying on the bottom of the sea for all eternity, and the secret behind the tragedy lies with her. Pitt looked at Steiger for a moment, then refilled the man's coffee cup. You're wrong, Colonel Steiger. Dead wrong. There is an answer, and it's not 3,000 miles from here. After breakfast, Pitt and Steiger went their separate ways. Pitt to probe a deep ravine that had been too narrow for the helicopter to enter, Steiger to find a stream in which to pan gold. The weather was crisp. A few soft clouds hovered over the mountaintops, and the temperature stood in the low 60s. It was past noon when Pitt climbed out of the ravine and headed back toward the cabin. He took a faintly marked trail that meandered through the trees and came out on the shore of Table Lake. A mile along the waterline, he met a stream that emptied out of the lake, and he followed it until he ran into Steiger. The colonel was contentedly sitting on a flat rock in the middle of the current, swishing a large metal pan around in the water. "Any luck?" Pitt yelled. Steiger turned around, waved, and began wading toward the bank. "I won't be making any deposits at Fort Knox. I'll be lucky if I can scrounge half a gram." He gave Pitt a friendly but skeptical look. "How about you? Find what you were looking for?" "A wasted trip," Pitt replied, "but an invigorating hike." Steiger offered him a cigarette. Pitt declined. "You know," Steiger said, lighting up, "you're a classic study of a stubborn man." "So I've been told," Pitt said, and laughed. Steiger sat down and inhaled deeply and let the smoke trickle between his lips as he spoke. "Now take me. I'm a bona fide quitter, but only on the matters that don't really count," he said. "Crossword puzzles, dull books, household projects, hook drugs. I never finish any of them. I figure without all that mental stress, I'll live 10 years longer." "A pity you can't quit smoking." "Touché," Steiger said. Just then, two teenagers, a boy and a girl, wearing down vests and standing on a makeshift raft, rounded a bend in the stream and drifted past. They were laughing with adolescent abandon, totally oblivious of the men on the bank. Pitt and Steiger watched them in silence until they disappeared downstream. "Now, there is the life," said Steiger. "I used to go rafting down the Sacramento River when I was a kid. Did you ever try it?" Pitt did not hear the question. He stood gazing intently at the spot where the boy and the girl became lost to view. His facial expression transformed from deep thoughtfulness to sudden enlightenment. "What's with you?" Steiger asked. "You look as though you've seen God." "It was socking me in the face all this time, and I ignored it," Pitt murmured. "Ignored what?" "It just goes to prove the toughest problems fall by the simplest solutions." "You haven't answered my question." "The oxygen tank and the nose gear," Pitt said. "I know where they came from." Steiger only looked at Pitt, his eyes clouded with skepticism. "What I'm getting at," Pitt continued, "is that we've been overlooking the one quality they share." "I fail to see the connection," said Steiger. "When installed in the aircraft, they work under two entirely different flow systems, one gas and the other hydraulic." "Yes, but take them off the aircraft and they both have one characteristic in common."
"Which is?"
Pitt gazed at Steiger and smiled and smiled. Then he spoke the magic words. "They float."